This episode has a language warning.
We search for oneness. People talk about being in the moment. When you're having an orgasm, are you in the shopping centre? You're not, are you? You're right there having the orgasm, yeah?
Hey, I'm Mike Williams.
I'm Timothy Nicastri. This is The Real Thing. And this is surfer, philosopher, Robbie Page.
When you cry, every cell in your body agrees, yeah? When you laugh, every cell's agreeing.
From surfing hero to zero, living with the French president to solitary confinement, Robbie Page has had a lot of ups and downs.
When you ride across a piece of water that's moving and it's dancing, every part of your reflexes and every part of your life is dancing to the dance of that water. So you've gone. Where were you going to? That's why we surf. Oneness. That you are in the moment as much as you can. That's what we're looking for. Right, back at it. Look at that now. Look, we can see the waves from behind on the beach.
Before it was surf, it was turf.
Yeah, my life was football. After my mum and dad separated, I went into football. That was where I found my manhood. Every boy wants to live with his dad, but if you don't have that, you've got to find another means to strengthen your manhood. I think football was that.
The switch to surfing was inevitable.
Moved down to Wollongong into the housing commissions with my mum. I looked out the window, seen the waves. I interpreted that God built the housing commission for me on the beach. I said, that must be it. I'm going to be a pro surfer. There was so much more spiritual growth outside of the footy field in the ocean. 75% of the earth I live on is water. I want to connect with that. I wanted to be a waterman. I wanted to have the knowledge of the sea. I wanted to be a Bruce Lee of the sea.
Robbie grew up after wandering 60s surf film The Endless Summer. The surfing he discovered was more radical, and by his teenage years in the early 80s, surfing had turned pro. For Robbie, it had wrapped around him physically, mentally, spiritually.
That's the highest form of martial art discipline for me, controlling your mind while you're underwater. The dojo's endless size. How big do you want it? Get out there. Waves break 100 feet.
Robbie was really good for his age, but he wasn't the best. You wouldn't imagine him on the pro tour. However,
anyone can be a pro surfer. If you've got money to pay your membership and you can fly to all the contests, you can compete. Like any circuit, you've got to go and compete on a whole bunch of contests all the way around the world and gather enough points until you qualify in the high ratings. It's fucking hard.
When he was 17, he made a risky decision.
Usually you'd want to make the top two or three in Australian juniors to know that you're good enough to go onto the world circuit.
But Robbie had placed sixth. He thought, stuff it.
I just bolted. Man, I'm out of here. I'm on tour. I'm going. Bang, I'm with the big boys. I'm into it. Whatever it takes, I'm there.
You had to rake up money to go to do it. What'd you do?
Well, yeah, I went and got sponsored. And I had one sponsor pay my air tickets and another one I asked for some spending money. I was only 17, I didn't even know what to ask for. I asked the sponsor for some spending money, the wetsuit sponsor, and he goes, how much do you want? And I go, I don't know, I'm going to be gone for 3 months. I'll need at least $500. I got to South Africa and I realised I had to spend $350 right then and turn pro and enter the event as a pro, because if I didn't turn pro, I would have been amateur and they wouldn't give me my prize money. I turned pro, made it through the trials, made $500. Bought presents for the people that gave me all the accommodation and went on to the next event. And that was the Gypsy Startup. A lot of guys were like that early days. Tent parks, people's floors, sleep under the scaffolding, whatever it took.
Hello in Beach, California for the largest surfing spectator event in the world, the OP Pro. Watching the top surfers from around the world battle it out for over $60,000 in cash and prizes.
1980s was a golden era for surfing events. The atmosphere and beach culture was unlike any sport.
It's a hard feeling to walk up the beach with 60,000. Remember, before the internet, there were 60,000, 80,000 people watching our beach events in America. It was quite an amazing feeling. You don't get people like that at the beach because they watch it all at home now.
The gamble paid off. Robbie won two of the World Pro Junior events and got third in the other.
It happened. I've been playing a guitar for 25 years and I'm still on four chords and the truth. But a surfboard, I jumped on a surfboard and was like Michael J. Fox on the Silver Surfer. I was off or whatever it was, you know. I was on fire. I wish I could do that with everything, but it's not like that. And that was it. I was off on a surfing tent and I didn't know what was on. I didn't know where I was going. But me and that surfboard had something to do. We went and did it. I became the World Pro Junior Champion. They didn't have titles then, but I smashed the whole world to pieces because I went and gathered knowledge from the front.
What was it like when you won? What were you feeling at the time? Yeah, could you believe it?
It's quite an embarrassing feeling for me when you're standing there and they're going, you're the guy, you're the guy, you're the guy, and you're going, fuck, I'm not the guy. I'm just having a moment at being the guy because there's many other moments I'm nothing to do with this guy having this moment. And it's quite a shy feeling initially when you win something big, but it's an invigorating feeling at the same time, you know. Yeah, way, bud.
Yeah, good, mate, Saul.
Yeah, good.
How you doing? The interview.
Yeah, a little interview.
Just catching up.
Just feeling like a legend for a minute in my own head, you know. Wow, I achieved so much in surfing, but what does it mean? It doesn't mean shit to anybody. What has it done? It more shows moments of where you've strung together high focus concentration to hold out the enemy, which is negative thought. It's an easy feeling when you win.
Robbie was different when he came back to Australia.
I was coming back as a sports star with a future that just kept saying it was going to double each year. Wealth, money, excitement. But I always ended up coming back to the Housing Commission and spending much time in there because it reminded me of what's true.
His mum and the Housing Commission home were the same.
Yeah, I had a hard time with it. There wasn't a lot of education in my family. I was living just with my mum at that moment. It was seeing how far away my mum was removed from what was available of life was shocking.
And his ego was becoming a problem.
I've had the Oakleys on me, white Reeboks, and, you know, I thought my shit didn't stink. I was a spunk. I was on. You go through that process, you know what I mean? Can't pinpoint, but you just look at photos and you go, yeah, it was a fucking wanker. When I look at photos when I won Pipe, I go, how did you win Pipe Masters? You was a kook. I realise I won off my innocence.
Winning those international junior events was big, but winning the Pipeline Masters 4 years later in 1988, that was massive. It's like the Wimbledon of surfing. The crown, and it's literally a crown, belonged to Robbie. Around the same time, a friend got in touch about a movie that was looking to cast pro surfers.
There's a film screen testing going on at Jerry Lopez's house and I should go down. So I rode my bike up and grabbed Ockie somewhere where he was hanging, someone's house, and rode down the bike. And
yeah, he got the part. It's time to go and play. The movie was called North Shore.
Made money, bought myself the property I'm living on here from the movie. Hey, mate. How are you, brother?
Good.
Where are you from?
Spain.
Friend, hola, ¿qué tal? Bien?
Muy bien, ¿y tú?
Yeah, good. What's your name?
Matias.
Robbie, I lived in France most of the time.
Nice to meet you, mate.
Nice to meet you, brother. Where are you living in Spain?
I live in the south.
Yeah? I love Spain. I love your country. I love the grooviness of your people, bro. So cool.
Robbie's Aboriginal and has Irish heritage. He likes talking big picture Australia, and that includes to random people walking by, like this guy.
Look, here's the question. Simple. Be open. How do you find Australians?
Stiff? Straight?
Maybe. Too much rules here, you
so
know?
So many rules, see?
Yeah, exactly.
Everything's rules.
Yeah, exactly.
See, do you hear that? Ugly.
His time abroad has impacted on his view.
That's the truth. I'm so glad you put that in, bro. Hey, nice to meet you, brother.
Mate. Have a day, mate.
Yeah. See you, bro. Now, that did you hear that? Yeah. You heard what he... What did he say? What word did he say?
Ugly.
That blew you away.
Anyway, in 1986, he wasn't thinking about any of that. It was all about... It's
time. So Randall Kleiser made that movie.
He's the guy who directed Grease.
It was another spiritual thing. Again, I've had all these spiritual things land. I remember sitting in Randall's hotel over Waikiki and he said, Robbie, do you want to have some... order some room service for dinner? I said, yeah, what can I have? He goes, what do you want? And I go, can I have a lobster? Imagine, you know, who's going to see? He goes, of course you can. I'm like, I'll order a lobster. So I had my first lobster ordered. That was fun. I really appreciated how hard it was to be an actor and to walk and land on all those T's in the light and to try to embody something. think again, went to the next level of ego. You go through these different levels of ego and then you get knocked down.
Despite massive competition wins, now a Hollywood movie under his belt, Robbie was having some problems.
I was going through a hard time with the sponsors. I ended up going through this real difficult time and the sponsors, we broke up, lost a lot of money, and it put me in a real emotional spin. I wasn't the most stable card in the deck to start with. Instead of maturely and professionally dealing with it, I sort of regressed back to the housing commission kid. Fuck everybody and angry and that whole scene. Laugh and the world laughs with you, get angry and cry and you're alone, no one's there, yeah? So I went through that process and it harmed me, and then I got a couple more good results, but Merry Christmas. I had a bit of a holiday. I went to Japan and got caught with acid, bang. You're in jail, your career's done. I'd say I was spiritually chosen for that one. Everybody was laced with too much LSD, cocaine. It was an era where a lot of people were high as a kite on the shit.
Robbie was going through a Japanese airport when someone in front of him got busted with a joint, so...
They grabbed the next blonde surfer, went through everything for 3 hours and found 5 hits of acid in a little receipt paper. Your career's done. Your career's done. 30 days in the Japanese police box and then 36 days in solitary. You are cooked. You are going cold turkey off everything. You have been a decadent sex machine travelling the world with blonde hair, getting paid, and be as decadent as you can be. Now you are sitting in a box like a bird in a birdcage, crying like a miserable piece of shit. That's it. All I got to do, out of a lot of people have been in jails, but they go in hellholes. I got to go in with the Japanese, the Buddhists. I got to go in a solitary room, sit very quiet and go through their process and eat pure Japanese high-quality food. And the sole purpose to life is to discover self. And the best way known to discover self is through solitary confinement. And that's why the monks would go and denounce life for 8 to 10 years and sit in a cave quietly. I came out not being all the drugs that the rest of my friends on the pro circuit were on, and came out with a real clear mind and heart, and everything new I gathered, I had appreciation. I lost millions, I lost everything. So when I came out, I just gathered.
His career was in tatters, but he'd never felt better.
I was not the same person after that, guaranteed. You're more of who you are. They say at the moment of death, the veil of superficiality melts away. So I came out feeling that. I came out of the jail, I was still 43rd in the world ratings. Still there. After 2.5 months in a can. They should have been back on the tour, but they barred me. I was quite angry and perturbed that an association I spent a whole lifetime wasn't there.
By now, almost all the sponsors had walked out the door. His options were...
Just 1 second. I'm up on the water tower doing an interview with a guy from ABC. Where are you?
Nice. I'm down at home.
Have you got coffee and tea?
You can come say hello.
I'll say hello when I'm finished up here soon.
All right, come and see me.
Yeah. What were you competing in if you were barred from the association?
I wasn't competing after that. I went into a free surfer.
One of his last sponsors were a French company, and they wanted to have a meeting. It was obvious they were going to drop him.
I said, I ain't going to talk to anyone. I'm going to Hawaii to charge pipeline, and after I get my editorial, you guys will see who I am on the planet, and then you really want to keep me. And they laughed. They said, you crazy bastard. Went to Hawaii, charged, went back to France, got me contracts back. Oui, monsieur, why don't you parler en français?
There's a whole world of surfing beyond competing. Robbie's view of the ocean was always bigger than that anyway. He's a professional waterman.
We film surfing, we make expeditions, we teach surfing, you know, it's endless. You either shrink or expand with whatever life throws at you. What do you want to do? I want to expand.
Robbie was still very much a part of the surfing world, and one day he was catching an event, and his "how's it going, mate" attitude led to an unexpected new chapter.
I met an English guy who came to the surfing contest to massage, and he was walking perturbed away from the event with this big massage towel. I asked him, "Where you going, mate?" And he goes, "Mate, I asked this guy, could I come and massage?" And the guy gave me the thumbs up. And now I come down the contest, these Frenchies won't let me in. I said, "Fuck that, you're with me, bruh." So I walked in, I took this English guy in with me, and I said to the boys, "Hey, boys, you want massage?" They're going, "Yeah." I go, €50 each. I organised him €500 right then. He looked at me and goes, "You're unbelievable." So I went down to see him after the event.
And that's when he was introduced to the French president's granddaughter.
I just lived there with them, simple. That's what I did. I had a good life, experienced what most people won't experience.
He dated Pascal for 5 years. During that time, he got to live with President Mitterrand.
It was really amazing how I didn't think they lived very big or very wealthy at all. I don't think they'd experienced the joys of life as much as I had already travelling the world as a pro surfer. Just ordinary people, mate. Ordinary people. I'd sit out in the garden with Granddad, President Mitterrand, and I'd make kookaburra sounds and he'd make chicken sounds before he passed away. He was quite happy with just... I don't care what your position is at work. I'm always going to judge your grandma or granddad to me girlfriend. And that's our Aussie way. Good Aussies will hold that normal deal. Kings, queens on the bottom, we're not differentiating. We're not built on that, are we? So, yeah, I felt pretty smooth with it. I went to the French castle at Fort de Bregenzor. Right before he gave up the presidency, we went there and spent a week there in the fort. It was quite cool. I wanted to steal one of those knives and forks and bring it home to me mum. Have a look at these.
After 12 years in France, another relationship, kids, Robbie could have gone anywhere. But he returned to Australia. He's traced his Indigenous roots to Dungaddy country in Kempsey. He lives on the property he purchased with money from the movie.
But I'm strong bloodline here, so... just wanted to come and live on the country, feel the vibe, live quiet. Just being a human and hopefully, you know, encouraging others to warm their heart up.
And he's never stopped surfing.
They say what they say, takes 20 years to learn to surf. Takes another 20 years for you to realise if you're going to surf until you're dead. So you go down to Crescent Head Point and you'll see 60 and 80-year-old men surfing. They've been going their entire life. People go, "I once was a surfer." Well, we say, if you once was a surfer, you never was. I came back to give my experience, you know, I'm a pro surfer all my whole life, I have a lot to give.
These days, he doesn't surf for money, or to pick up, or because he gets free sunglasses. He surfs on behalf of Indigenous cultural awareness.
I suppose surfing now is a political platform. So the gathering of Indigenous surfing events are to empower the surfers, because those surfers I see as the spiritual lights of their communities. I know they are, because I know what size waves they've ridden, so I know what spiritual tests they've been through to be out there when it's 15 to 20 feet. You don't go out there if your spirit hasn't prepared for it, if it's not seasoned for that. Well, your wave is a mirror for you to look into yourself at, and whatever size wave you can ride is how big you can really look into your own self. That's why I ride water, spiritual growth.
You're along for the ride this summer with The Real Thing. So great to be with you. And remember, new episodes are dropping every 2 weeks on a Tuesday.
Yeah, hit subscribe, come along for the ride.
Now, The Real Thing newsletter. We have a new email newsletter if you want to find out about our latest episodes, something from behind the scenes, and maybe even a prize from time to time. Subscribe.
Yes.
And speaking of prizes.
If you subscribe right now, before now. January 8th, you go in the running to win some movie tickets. So check out the link to subscribe in this audio description on this episode or on our website.
Thanks to Selena Shannon for helping produce this episode. I'm Timothy Nicastri.
I'm Mike Williams.
And that's episode 28 of The Real Thing.